every day to lying in my bed staring at the ceiling. It was amazing how much conditioning could decay in a month. A month. More than that. It hadn't really hit me how long it had been, until I physically felt the way my body had changed in that time. With every panting breath, every drill, every strike against the stiff fabric of the training dummy, it dug a little deeper. A month. More than a full cycle of the moon that my father had been dead. I tried to outrun this thought, tried to make my muscles hurt more so my heart hurt less. It didn't work. The thoughts still chased me. A month. And I'd just made an alliance with the man who murdered him. And now I'd cracked open the door to a single innocuous thought, and before I could stop myself, it was becoming something monstrous. A month. How many times had I been in this training ring with Vincent? Countless. I could practically hear him now, barking orders at me. Faster, harder, don't be sloppy. You aren't trying hard enough, little serpent. That will not be good enough when it counts. He pushed me so hard. Sometimes I'd end our sessions collapsing in a pool of my own vomit. I push you because I wanted you to be safe, Vincent whispered in my ear. He pushed me so I could protect myself. Everything in this world is dangerous to you, he reminded me. Because I was human. But I wasn't. It was a lie. All of it. My strikes against the dummy grew faster, harder, sloppy. My lungs burned, chest ached. Nightfire bloomed at the edge of my blade, surrounding me with flecks of white. But I wasn't. How many times had I practiced my magic with Vincent in this ring? How many times had he told me that my power would likely never amount to anything? Had that been a lie too? Did you know? I asked him now, driving another blow into the training dummy, the stuffing collapsing under the force. Vincent's voice was silent. Why didn't you tell me? Why did you lie to me, Vincent? Why? Silence. Of course. The nightfire flared in a wild surge, surrounding me in a blinding burst. With a ragged roar, I slammed my weapon into the dummy, sending it toppling to the floor. My strike was so clumsy, so vicious, I accidentally sent my blade with it, the metal hitting the ground with a deafening clatter. I barely heard it over the sound of my panting breaths. And then, I heard a familiar voice behind me. Didn't realize just how lucky I am to be alive until I saw that. Rain. I squeezed my eyes shut, quickly swiping away tears. Fuck. Right, I choked out. It sounded pathetically weak.
You sound out of breath, though.
Oh, fuck him. I'm just out of practice.
Want a partner?
No. He approached anyway. I still didn't want to look at him. Embarrassed about what I'd allowed him to see. Me crying and punching the air like a child. Nice. But his silence was too long. Too meaningful. Finally, I turned to him. What? I snapped. He opened his mouth, then seemed to think better of it.
Nothing. You sure you don't want to spar? Better than punching the dummy. Going to have to train with me eventually.
He reached for his sword, raising a brow. Only now did it occur to me how strange it was that he always kept it on him, even when he was walking around his own castle. Maybe he felt just as uncomfortable in this place as I did. He added, with a conspiratorial half-smile,
I'm only offering because I don't see any windows you can throw me out of this time.
I didn't know why I hesitated. I did need to remind myself of how Rain fought. Needed to make sure I would be able to strike him down when I had to. And yet, it made me uncomfortable. I shoved that sensation away and bit out, fine, if you want to spar, then let's spar. And I didn't give Rain time to react before I lunged. But he was ready. He blocked and countered me easily. All of it was easy. That was what made it so difficult. When I had fought Rain in the armory, I'd so hated to be reminded of how well we knew each other, how seamlessly we fought together. Now, wielding my blades rather than that clumsy sword. The ghosts of our final battle in the Qajari surrounded us. The ache of my muscles faded away. The two of us hurtled across the training ring together as if locked in a dance. I hated this, and I loved it. It was something solid to grab onto, something mindless and painful in all the physical places I could handle. And yet, every one of Rain's strikes reminded me of the familiarity we'd once had, reminded me of what he had used it to do. A month. I let out a wordless grunt of exertion as the clangs of metal against metal came faster, faster, faster. I saw his mouth twist just a little, heard what he didn't say aloud.
There she is.
The night fire erupted around me, this time not just clinging to my blades and my hands, but embracing my entire body. Rain jerked backwards, his arm flying up to shield his face, and that was enough to yank me from my trance. Awareness of my body crashed back into me. My panting breath, burning lungs, screaming muscles. Just as quickly, the night fire withered. I stumbled to the ground as Rain raised his sword in a yield. He was panting too. He wiped sweat from his forehead with the back of his hand.
"That,"
he said,
"is impressive. Seems like it comes to you a lot easier than it did before."
Thank you didn't feel like the right answer. I inspected my blade, polishing it with my sleeve.
"Do you do that on purpose?"
he asked. It was the kind of question that was really a statement, and that annoyed me.
"When I first got my air mark," he said, "everything just rearranged. I still can't describe how different I felt afterwards. And then, when Nyaxia..."
He flinched, shrugged.
"It just changes a lot. It was like I didn't know what my own body was capable of anymore."
His words rang uncomfortably true. But he didn't ask me if I felt that way too. Maybe because he already knew the answer.
"You're half vampire, Aurea,"
he said quietly.
"Not just half vampire, but an heir. Have you thought about what that might mean?"
I lifted my gaze to meet Rain's, steady with that open question. And with that look, I had to acknowledge all the other things it meant. It meant I no longer knew anything about myself. My magic, my lifespan, my blood, the limits of my own flesh. It meant that my entire life had been a lie. I didn't say anything. And Rain, to my relief, did not push. Instead, he offered me his hand. I didn't take it and pushed myself up on my own. He huffed a laugh and shook his head as he turned away.
"Never change, Aurea. Come on, let's go."
I wasn't done.
"You look like you're about to collapse. You can come break yourself again another time."
He glanced at me over his shoulder.
"Maybe you're due for a trip to the human districts. You look like you need to kill something."
"Oh, I need to kill something," I muttered. But as much as I wanted to argue with him, I was exhausted. So I followed. "What's so important?" I asked as we walked down the hall.
"I found your bodyguard."
Bodyguard? Ugh, just when I'd gotten freedom for the first time in my life? He chuckled.
"Even I have bodyguards, princess. You think I'd let you wander around this pit of beasts alone?"
"You sound like him," I grumbled, and tried not to notice how Rain's smile disappeared at that. He led me all the way back to our rooms. He opened the door to his chambers and beckoned.
"Meet your bodyguard."
The words weren't even out of his mouth before Misha was pushing past him, the grin on her face bright enough to light up the darkest corners of the castle. And goddess damn me if I didn't find myself returning it. Rain put his hand, gently, on her shoulder, as if to physically restrain her from throwing herself at me. But she caught herself at the last minute anyway, stopping short of hugging me and instead offering me an enthusiastic, if awkward, wave. "I missed you," she blurted out. Honestly, I'd missed her too.
Rain was, to my genuine relief, mostly exaggerating when he said that Misha would be my bodyguard. She wouldn't be shadowing my every move, but if I accepted, she'd be given the other bedchamber in my apartment and accompany me on trips. I don't need to be watched, I grumbled. At that, a little wrinkle of concern had formed over Misha's brow.
If you want me to go somewhere else, she said, I can.
I glanced at Rain. I don't think it's up to me. He replied simply,
It is up to you. Tell her to find another place and she will.
Ugh, that seems so cruel. Why doesn't she stay with you? I asked.
I snore.
Misha sighed.
He does. He really, really does.
I knew he did because I'd heard those snores every day for months myself.
Besides,
Rain said,
if it's not Misha, then I'll have to find another guard for you. One of Keturah's, if you'd prefer that.
I glared at him, and he half shrugged, adding,
act of war and all that.
Misha stared at me like a stray puppy begging to be let inside. I sighed and pinched the bridge of my nose. Fine, I muttered, as Misha grinned and started dumping her clothing into the drawers. Chapter 17. Araya. Lahore. Rain tapped the map again.
Lahore.
I stared at the city at the tip of his finger, a little ink drawing of broken stone. A single tiny sigil was inked above it, a taloned claw holding a rose. The last 2 weeks had passed in an uneventful blur, sleeping, training, waiting for the next move. The next move, apparently, turned out to be Lahore. One night, after training, Rain pulled me into his chambers and dragged an extra chair to his desk, which was covered with maps and papers. He'd pulled out a heavy atlas of the House of Night and pointed at a city on the far eastern shores. Now I stared at it. All right, I said, in a tone that said, why the hell are you showing me this?
You're familiar with it.
Of course. I'd memorized this map when I was a small child, and these ink lines were all I'd had of the outside world. Lahore had always interested me, because its crest matched the one that Vincent bore on some of his clothing. The thought of Vincent came with the obligatory stab of grief, and then, shortly after, a wave of realization. You're asking, I assume, I said, because it's Vincent's homeland. But he didn't talk about it much. I'd rarely asked about Vincent's past. I learned quickly that he didn't like to talk about it, and I wasn't in the business of saying things that Vincent did not like.
It was a very long time ago that I lived there,
he had told me.
It's not my banner anymore. All of the House of Night is mine.
I'd accepted that. After all, it had taken me years to see Vincent as a person who had existed beyond the walls of his castle, as a fallible being with a history. Hell, maybe right up until the end, I hadn't seen him that way.
If Vincent had needed to hide something,
Rain said,
and he needed to put it somewhere where only he could find it, do you think that's where he'd go?
I didn't answer for a long moment, my chest tight. At first, I wanted to say no. Vincent hadn't wanted to even acknowledge his past before his reign. But then again, just because Vincent didn't want to acknowledge something didn't make it any less true. The lie of my own blood was more than enough proof of that. I don't know, I said at last. I knew so damned little of my father.
Septimus wants us to go there,
Rain said.
He thinks that Vincent hid something there, something to do with the god blood.
And why does Septimus think this? A dark laugh.
I wish I knew how that man knows half the things he does.
I felt that too, especially since I had my own secrets to protect.
I have to admit,
Rain said,
it does seem like the perfect hiding spot, right there on the eastern tip of the House of Night.
No one needs to go there for anything. Inaccessible as fuck. Overrun with hellhounds and demons. And Vincent had kept some odd trinkets from there in his chambers, which seems unlike him. The place, from what I hear, is little more than ruins now. Fallen into some disarray since Vincent left it 200 years ago.
My brow furrowed in thought. I think his niece lives there. Or niece once removed. Twice removed. Evelina? Something like that.
Right. Another reason why this will be complicated. I don't think she'll be very happy to see us.
To see us? We're going?
What did you think we were going to do? Send a couple of servants to go search for us?
At my flat stare, Rain laughed.
My, how you've adjusted to royal life, Your Highness.
Fuck you, I muttered. But then the truth of his words sunk in. Complicated. That was right. No Hiage would welcome the Rishon King at their gates. Not even accompanied by me. Perhaps especially not accompanied by me. Because this was Vincent's only living relative, who probably thought she would be heir when Vincent died.
That was the face I made when I thought about it, too,
Rain said. Tell me we're taking an army with us.
Right, with all those loyal warriors that I have to spare.
He raised his brows at me.
What about you? You plan on calling in some loyal and cooperative Hiage soldiers to escort us? Or are they all too busy trying to kill my people?
My face answered his question.
Exactly, he said.
Wouldn't it be smarter if you stayed here? A king shouldn't leave his castle unguarded.
A king shouldn't leave his queen unguarded either, especially not one as prone to getting into trouble as you.
He gave me a sly grin.
Besides, if you think I'm going to miss the chance to get out of this damned place and go get my hands dirty, you don't know me at all.
I thought he would say that.
Part 3. Crescent Moon. Interlude. Turning is a fate worse than death. It is death, in a way. Death of a version of yourself that you will never see again. Born vampires could not possibly understand, nor are they usually especially inclined to. To them, the turmoil of the turned is a sign of weakness. A snake, after all, does not mourn its skin. What they will never understand is how much that skin takes with it. The man clings to his humanity through every second of his transformation. It must be ripped away from him, stitch by stitch. Turning is a terrible process. It nearly kills him. He loses weeks, months to illness, taken in an onslaught of delirium. Dreaming of his home, dreaming of his mistakes, dreaming of the family he does not yet know he would never see again. He barely remembers the aftermath of the shipwreck when he emerges from this haze. The king is beside him, perched at the edge of his bed, watching him with the kind of detached interest that one affords a new pet. He offers a goblet, and the man gulps it down frantically, liquid spilling down his chin. He's never tasted anything so wonderful, so sweet, so rich, so... The king pulls the goblet away. That's enough for you now, he says, with a thick accent, patting the man's shoulder and setting the cup aside. The man wipes the mess from his face with the back of his hand and blinks down at the smears of red left behind, confused. He does not understand yet, you see, what happened to him. He puts aside his hand and his confusion. His family, he thinks. How long has he been here? Time blurs. The ship seems like a lifetime ago. Thank you, he chokes out. Thank you for your hospitality, but I need to go. The king smiles and says nothing. Perhaps he didn't understand him, the man thinks. He is far from home. What country had he ended up in? He knew once, but now... It doesn't matter. The man doesn't speak any language but the commonest tongue he'd grown up with. I need to leave, he said again, speaking slowly, each word enunciated, pointing to the window that overlooks the sea. The king still does not answer. His smile broadens slightly, revealing the tips of his pointed teeth. Those teeth. The sight brings with them the memory of the night of his almost death. Do you want to live? Dread rises. The man ignores it. Please, he says. But the king just strokes the back of his hand. You have no more home, he says, somewhat pityingly, words serrated with the thick tang of his accent. You exist only here. Years later, the man will remember little of this conversation, but those four words will remain, even when the specifics of the rest are long lost. You exist only here. It will become the truth. The king has given the man a new life, but the catch is that this life belongs solely to him. This is the moment that the man understands how much his life has just changed. He shakes his head, trying to get up, but the king pushes him back to the bed easily. The man is too tired and dizzy to fight, though he claws through it with every bit of his remaining strength. But when the king offers him his wrist, the scent dazes him. It will not be so bad, the king says, as he guides the man's head to his skin. Chapter 18. Rain. I practically skipped out of that castle. Weeks out of that place. Weeks away from those stone walls and those people and that musty incense smell that reminded me far too much of 200-odd years ago. It was every gift I'd ever gotten rolled into one, better than any birthday. Karis would stay behind to manage the affairs of the crown and Vale to continue directing the battles across the House of Night. He seemed a little relieved to have an excuse to remain. Keturah and a few of her most trusted soldiers would come with us. I tried to talk Misha out of it, but this, of course, was futile. She made it about two sentences before she cut me off and said, "Do you want me to let you finish this before I tell you I'm not listening? I'm a bodyguard, remember?" Then again, maybe it was for the better. Better to be out there with us than to be in this place alone. Septimus, of course, insisted on coming himself, too, bringing his second and a small force of bloodborne guards with him. Lahore was one of the most remote cities in the House of Night, all the way at the tip of the eastern shores, surrounded by water on three sides. Truly in the middle of nowhere. The journey alone took almost 2 weeks. We moved quietly, taking advantage of our limited forces to move swiftly, days spent in unassuming inns where no one would ask questions or in makeshift camps on the road. The winged among us flew, while the bloodborne followed on horseback. I carried Araya, which was about as awkward as it had been last time. It was impossible to focus on anything with her quick heartbeat throbbing in my eyes and her steel sweat scent in my nostrils, and her body stiff and uncomfortable next to mine. All these distracting reminders of what we'd been to each other before, and just how far away that was now. We traveled over rolling desert sands, smooth swells of pale moonlight-drenched gold. When I'd first come here, after I'd made it through the worst of my turning sickness, I still remembered so clearly stumbling to the window in my room in Nekulai's castle. I'd staggered against the glass, eyes glued to those distant dunes. I'd thought, this place has no fucking right to be so beautiful. I'd never seen the beauty in all the typical trappings of vampire allure. Their physical appearances, their gold and silver, their fashion. But as much as I wanted to hate those dunes, I couldn't. For days we flew over the deserts, sand and sand and sand, interrupted by occasional cities and townships, and the rare lake or river surrounded by scattered greenery. But when we grew closer to Lahore, those smooth waves of gold were shattered by sudden gashes of broken stone. First a couple, then more and more as the hours passed, until the ground below us looked like distant crumpled parchment, all hard angles and sharp edges, cut through only by a single road. No movement below from other travelers, only distant roving packs of hellhounds and demons. Lahore was that kind of place. The kind of place that the world just moved on without. No one had much of a reason to come here. Except for us. When we landed, Araya made a face of such abject disgust I wish I could capture it and keep it for the next time I didn't have words to describe how much I hated something. "Impressed with your ancestral homelands, princess?" I said. The wrinkle over her nose deepened. "What is that smell?" "Viprous weed. It grows on the cliffs near the water here," I said. "It spreads quick and then rots as soon as it touches air, so whenever the tide goes out..."
"Eh!"
Misha made a sound like a cat hacking up a hairball.
"Gross!"
"Would be even worse if you could see it. Looks like entrails, and then it shrivels up like..."
"Oh, I get it."
"You've been here before?" Araya said. I shot her a little smirk. "I've been everywhere." "Aren't we lucky to have a world traveler as our guide?" Septimus said. He was smoking, of course. His horse, a big white beast with pink-rimmed eyes, snorted and shook its head, as if just as offended by the stench as we were. He looked up at the gates ahead of us. "Looks like a beautiful city." The words dripped with sarcasm. Earned sarcasm. Maybe once, a very long time ago, Lahore had been a beautiful place. With a very active imagination, you could maybe see the ghost of what once stood here. Obatres was an old, old continent, far older than Nyaxia's patronage and far older than vampirism. Lahore, though, actually looked it. Now it was little more than ruins. The wall that stood before us was formidable, perhaps the only well-maintained part of the city. Black onyx stretching high above us and out to either side. The skyline beyond the wall, though. It was what bones were to bodies. What had once been buildings were now jagged spires of shattered stone, the mere suggestion of architecture. Towers cracked and leaning on uneven piles of stone. The only lights upon this skyline were distant, wild flames along the jagged peaks of a few of the tallest broken spires. The towering onyx doors before us remained firmly closed.
"How quaint," Septimus said.
"Quaint,"
Keturah echoed, eyeing the road behind us. All the packs of hellhounds yipping and howling not far from us. It was rare that so many of these beasts would come so close to a town. More evidence that Evelena was not doing much to maintain her homeland.
"So now what?" Araya said, turning to the door. "We knock?"
"It's your cousin, princess. You tell us." Evelena knew we were coming. Araya and I had penned a letter to her before we left, announcing our visit. A tour of all notable vampire nobles in the House of Night. Karis had heaped sickening amounts of flattery into it. We'd ensured that she had received it, but we'd gotten no response. That didn't surprise me. Even my own nobles weren't especially inclined to return my letters. I jerked my chin towards Septimus's companions. "You think you can take down this wall?"
"I hope you're joking," Keturah muttered. "Stupidest idea."
I was half joking. Araya had slowly approached the door, staring up at it. Something about the expression on her face made me pause. I approached her.
"What?"
I asked softly.
"It just feels strange here."
She lifted her palm as if to lay it against the door. And then a deafening grinding rang out as the stone swung open. The sound was hideous, squealing and cracking as if the gate protested moving at all after decades or centuries. The curtains of stone darkness parted and Lahore spread out before us. It was even worse than it had seemed in silhouette. The road ahead, nothing but slabs of broken stone, every building half open and crumbling, every window, nothing but broken shards of glass. Standing before us was a boy, no older than 16 at most. He wore a long purple jacket that didn't fit him well, once fine but now several hundred years out of style. Waves of pale blonde hair framed a delicate face and wide, empty, ice-blue eyes. Those eyes seemed to stare through us, not at us.
And then, just as the grinding finally stopped, they went suddenly sharp, taking us in with eviscerating keenness, before sliding back to cow-like vacancy. He bowed low before us.
Highnesses, my Lady Evelena welcomes you to Lahore. Come, you must be eager to rest after your long journey.
Chapter 19. Rain. The castle was the only building in this place that seemed to be almost in one piece. It was the tallest building in the city, which was to say, it was the pile of rubble that towered over all the other piles of rubble. It was cold and damp inside, ocean breezes flowing in through broken windows, strong enough to rustle heavy velvet curtains that reeked of mold. We didn't pass a single soul as we were led through the halls, into an expansive room with tall ceilings and towering windows that overlooked the churning sea beyond the cliffs. Some of the panes were tinted red. Maybe that once had been some kind of design decision, but now it looked eerie and disparate, because so much of the glass had been shattered. Yet even on such a sad canvas, the view was breathtaking. There were few places anywhere in the House of Night where you could see the water like this, ocean surrounding you on all sides. A gust of wind bellowed through the room, salt so heavy it made my eyes water, the stench of viprous thick enough to gag on. A dais sat before the windows, bearing a rotting velvet throne with only one armrest and a cracked back. And upon that throne was Evelena. She was only a distant relative of Vincent's, and much younger than him. During his bloody night of ascension to power, he'd killed most of his close family members, carving a carefully mapped path to his inheritance. Yet she resembled him. She had the fair eyes, not the moon silver that he'd passed on to Araya, but the cold ocean blue favored by most of his line. Her cheekbones were high and features severe as if made of glass. Her blonde hair fell over each shoulder so long that it pooled in her lap in dry waves. She rose, her white gown dragged along the floor as she stepped down the dais steps, the hem blood-stained and dirty. It, like the boy's jacket, was an outdated style, like she'd gotten it about 150 years ago. Maybe it had been beautiful back then. Her gaze passed over me, then Septimus, and then landed on Araya, and stayed there, as a slow grin spread over her face. I could practically feel Araya stiffen. Hell, I did too. I resisted the urge to step in front of her as Evelena approached.
Cousin,
Evelena purred.
What a joy to finally meet.
Araya, ever transparent, blinked in shock at the sound of Evelena's voice. So young, like it could have belonged to a 14-year-old girl. Evelena lay her hands on Araya's shoulders, and I could see every muscle in Araya's body tightening to avoid pulling away. Evelena, she said, and nothing else. She clearly didn't know what else to say. My wife was not much of an actress, but I could be good enough for both of us. My hand slid around Araya's shoulders, casually displacing Evelena's. Thank you for your hospitality, Lady Evelena. I have to admit, we weren't sure what we'd find. We never received your response to our letter. Evelena smiled, but a familiar, intoxicating scent, just a whiff of it, dragged my attention away. At first, I thought I was imagining it. But then I swept my thumb over her shoulder right where Evelena's hand had rested. Warm. Wet. Blood. My fake smile withered. My gaze shot to Evelena, who folded her claw-tipped hands at her lap, leaving little specks of bright red blood on her dress. A wave of the exact same emotion that had fallen over me before I ripped Marta's head off his body stifled me. Evelena just kept up that dreamy smile.
I wasn't sure that you would be so interested in coming so far east. Such a journey. You must be starving. Come, I've had a feast prepared.
Her eyes brightened.
More than a feast, a ball. One of the grandest Lahore has seen in decades. Come.
Well, that sounded morbid. It was morbid. When we were brought to the ballroom, I actually stifled a laugh because honestly, I couldn't help myself. The room had been grand once and still held the distant echo of its long-ago magnificence, albeit all covered with a faint layer of dust. Long tables sat over mosaic tile floors on one side of the room, the windows overlooking the sea beyond them. The other side was a dance floor, a roaring bonfire in the hearth, and an orchestra before it, magically enhanced, ghostly music echoing against the ceilings. Yes, this had all the trappings of a ball, the entertainment, the tables of food and wine, the finery. Except of the dozens of guests that turned to regard us with silent curiosity as we arrived, not a single one appeared to be more than 15 years old. Most were far younger, 10 or 12, wearing clothes so ill-fitting that they dragged skirts and pant hems over the dusty floor. Almost all of them were blonde with fair eyes. Surely these couldn't all be her children. Or if they were all members of her family, where were the other parents? Evelina took no notice of the sudden awkward silence. She stretched her arms out.
Come, sit.
The children wordlessly turned to the tables and took their seats. I'd witnessed plenty of disturbing things in my time, but the silent, simultaneous obedience with which dozens of children did this would certainly be among the most unnerving. The seats at the head of the table closest to Evelina were apparently ours. She motioned to them, and we, ever the respectful guests, took our chairs.
You must be famished, she said.
Her eyes fell to me and her smile stilled. Hatred. Easy to see it. I knew how to recognize it by now. That wasn't a surprise. I'd killed Vincent, after all. There was a reason why Aurea's name had come first in our letter. I glanced at Aurea's shoulder and the little beads of scabbing red on her shoulders. Not that that seemed to be going any better. We couldn't trust this woman. We had to get what we needed and get the fuck out of... The smell made my head snap up. Blood. Human blood. Lots of it. Still beating. The truth was, I was hungry after so much travel. The truth was, even after all this time, when I first smell it, it takes me a minute to collect myself. Keturah's eyes brightened. The bloodborn peered over their shoulder. Evelina perked up too, her smile brightening.
At last,
she crooned, shifting aside so that her child servants could hoist a naked woman onto the table.
Chapter 20. Aurea. The woman was still alive. Her throat had been cut, but not enough to make her bleed out fast. Her eyes, big and dark, danced wildly about the room, landed on me. A sudden, intense wave of nausea made vomit rise in my throat. Images from another feast hall, another table, another human bleeding out on a wooden slab, shown to me by my own father, assaulted me. I glanced at Rain. His face was still for a moment, frozen, as if stuck momentarily between masks. Then it softened into a predatory grin. What a treat. I took a drink from my wine glass because I desperately needed something to do with my hands and immediately choked. Whatever flowed over my tongue was thick and savory, punctuated with an iron bite. Blood. My stomach lurched. And yet my body did not reject it. It accepted it. Some dark, primal part of myself purred as I forced myself to let the blood slide down my throat. Goddess, what was wrong with me? I swallowed hard just to keep myself from throwing up. The woman before me kept looking at me, her eyes blurring out and then refocusing, like she knew that I wasn't one of them. Several other humans had been placed on the tables. Most were listless, alive but not moving. Some still weakly struggled and were secured to the table to keep them from moving. A sickening sight when it was children doing the securing. Misha sipped blood from her wine glass, doing a poor job at hiding her fascinated disgust.
If the Bloodborne were surprised, they didn't show it. Gracefully accepting human wrists and throats, observing the rest of the room with wary interest. Septimus offered a pleasant smile and raised his glass in a wordless toast before setting the goblet down in favor of the woman's limp wrist. At the other place settings, children climbed over the tables, clustering around the corpses like starving flies, their only sounds the frantic drinking and the stifled moans of pain of their human offerings. Rain cast me a glance so quick I thought I might have imagined it. Then he grinned.
"You have spoiled us, Evelina," he said,
placed his hands on either side of the woman's head, and turned her face towards him. Her eyes widened, a little whimper of fear escaping her lips. More like a gargle, actually. This woman was already dead, I knew. Nothing could save her now. She'd drowned slowly in her blood, conscious while the rest of them drained her. I watched Rain, a knot of disgust in my stomach. I'd never seen him drink live prey before, let alone from a human. I shouldn't have been surprised to see him do this. He'd tricked me many times before. He was a vampire, after all. And yet, a little silent sigh of relief passed over me when I saw the shift in his face when he looked into her eyes. I wondered if I was the only one who saw it. The brief trade of the bloodthirsty hunger for silent compassion intended only for her. He tilted her head back, lowered his face, and sank his teeth into her throat. He bit hard, hard enough that I could hear his teeth slicing the muscle. Little flecks of blood spattered my face, which I promptly wiped away. He drank for several long seconds, his throat bobbing with deep gulps, before lifting his head again, crimson at the corners of his mouth and seeping into the lines of his grin.
"Perfect," he said. "You have fine taste, Evelina."
But Evelina frowned down at the woman, whose eyes now stared half-closed, vacant, to the other side of the room, bare chest no longer fighting for breath.
"You killed her," she said, disappointed.
"A quick, painless death. A mercy." Rain laughed, wiping the blood off his mouth with the back of his hand.
"I got a bit overzealous, but she's still plenty warm. We'll last the next few hours, at least."
Evelina looked put out by this. Then a smile rolled over her lips.
"You're right. No need to waste. Besides, there are many more where she came from."
His grin stiffened, so tight it looked like it might crack. A regular occurrence here, then. Then again, wasn't it a regular occurrence everywhere? I just let myself be sheltered from it for so long. The Araya of the past wouldn't be able to hide her revulsion. She'd let it all show on her face and trigger a messy argument, and we'd all get kicked out of this city before we even had the chance to start looking for what we came here for. But then again, the Araya of the past wouldn't be here at all. So I decided to try my hand at acting. I lifted my glass and offered Evelina my best, most bloodthirsty smile.
"No such thing as too much for a family reunion," I said.
"Drink, cousin. You're too sober for how late it is tonight." The tension snapped. Evelina laughed, her childlike delight befitting of a little girl presented with a doll. She clinked her glass against mine, hard enough to send blood wine sloshing over both of our hands.
"The truth, cousin," she said,
and drained her glass.
"You're much better at this than I would have thought,"
Rain whispered in my ear several hours later. He snuck up on me. The sensation of his breath against the crest of my ear sent a shiver over my skin, leading me to take a big step away from him. "It wasn't very hard," I said.
"Still, I give you points for even trying it. Feels like a very different kind of move for you."
He nudged my arm with his elbow.
"Dare say you're evolving, princess."
"Your approval means so much to me," I deadpanned, and Rain's laugh sounded like one of genuine delight. All night I had been working on getting Evelina as drunk as possible, and I had been very, very successful. Rain and I stood in the corner of the ballroom, watching her spin around in circles with one of her child nobles, laughing hysterically while the child's face remained that of porcelain still calm. The humans, now mostly drained, lay slumped over tables and against the walls, though a few of the children still crawled over them to lap at their throats or thighs. The Bloodborne remained clustered together, watching the scene before them warily, lazily sipping their blood. "She," Rain said, "is going to be in a lot of pain tomorrow."
"That's the idea." "There's no one looser with secrets than a drunkard. No one easier to slip around than a vampire who needed to spend the next 2 days recovering from gorging themselves the night before on blood or alcohol, or better yet, both."
"I loved the night after parties when I was growing up," I said. "They'd all be asleep, and I could do whatever I wanted for a few hours."
"If she's drunk enough, she'll tell us what we need to know, and then she'll be out of the way for the next day or two."
"Sounds perfect."
Perfect, so long as Evelina was the only one we had to worry about. I still wasn't sure that was the case. Lahore might be a city of ruins, but there had to be someone living here other than her.
"Have you seen anyone else?" I asked, voice low.
"You mean, other than the 50-something golden-haired children in this room? No."
We both paused, watching those children. They crawled over the bodies and grabbed at goblets, ignoring Evelina's wild flailing until she pulled them in and insisted they dance with her. Even for vampires, their stares were so still, empty. And every one of them fair-eyed blondes.
"They're turned,"
Rain said, voice low. I glanced at him. "What?"
"They're turned. The children. They're all turned."
I looked at the children, lapping at pools of blood like stray cats drinking gutter water, with fresh horror. The suspicion had been there in the back of my mind, but now that the thought had been yanked to the forefront, the horror of it rose up my throat slowly. With every second I considered it, it became a greater atrocity. Born vampires aged normally, but children who were turned would be stuck that way for eternity, both their minds and bodies frozen in eternal, crippling youth. A terrible fate.
"How do you—" I started.
"Have you tried to talk to any of them? Many of them don't even speak Obatrain. Found one that only knew Glenn."
Another wave of disgust. "She brought them here from the human nations?"
"I don't know how they got here. Maybe she pays traffickers? Maybe some were shipwrecked. Maybe she gets some of them from her human districts. Hell, there are enough of them. Probably all those things."
I watched Evelina spin around the room gleefully, clinging to one of her child servants, who seemed to stare 1,000 miles past her. All the same appearance. All so young. And young forever now.
My stomach turned.
Rain and I exchanged a glance. I knew we were both asking the same silent questions, and both repulsed by every potential answer.
"Your cousin," he said between his teeth, "is a fucked up piece of work."
I shook away my discomfort. "Let's just get whatever the hell we're here for and get out."
I started walking into the thick of the party, but Rain grabbed my arm.
"Where are you going?"
I yanked away from his grip, getting some information out of her before she passes out. I tried to pull away from his grip, but he tugged me closer.
"Alone?"
What the hell kind of a question was that? I expected my face to earn the usual chuckle and teasing remark, but he remained serious.
"What about these?"
His fingertips ran over the curve of my shoulder. Goosebumps rose on my skin, a chill trailing his touch. Then a twinge of pain as he brushed the still bleeding half-moon marks Evelina had left behind. It was so shockingly soft that my rebuke tangled on my tongue. It took me a moment too long to say, "It's nothing."
"It's not nothing."
Nothing I can't handle. I'm used to being hated.
No, you're used to being dismissed. Being hated is infinitely more dangerous.
I pulled my arm away, and this time, he let me go. I won the Kajari Rain. I can handle her. Rain gave me a half smile.
Technically, I won the Kajari, actually, he said,
and didn't move. But he also didn't take his eyes off me. Evelina was already very, very drunk. When I approached her, she released the hands of her child companion and held hers out to me instead. I genuinely could not bring myself to take her hands, but I let her drape them over my shoulders.
"Cousin, I'm so happy you have finally come to visit me," she slurred. "It does get so very lonely here."
Not that lonely, if she'd turned an army of children to keep her company. She swayed a little closer, and I watched her nostrils flare with the movement. She had been gorging herself all night. There was no way she was hungry. But human blood was human blood. I stepped away from her grasp, looping her arm through mine and holding it firmly so that she couldn't get any closer. "Show me my father's possessions," I said. "I always wanted to see where he grew up." I wondered if the words sounded as unconvincingly sickly saccharine as they felt coming out of my mouth. If they did, Evelina was too drunk to notice.
"Of course! Oh, of course, of course. Come, come," she crooned,
and stumbled with me down the hall. I didn't look back, but I felt Rain's gaze following me the whole way down the hall. Chapter 21 Araya.
"Not much still exists," Evelina slurred as she led me down dark, crumbling hallways.
There were almost no torches, and my human sight struggled to avoid the uneven tiles and cracks in the floor, coupled with the fact that an extremely drunk Evelina had attached herself to me. It took a lot of concentration just to keep myself putting one foot in front of the other.
"But I kept it," Evelina went on as she dragged me around a corner. "I kept all of it. I thought he might come back someday. Here."
Her face lit up, and she jerked away from my grasp. In the darkness, I tripped over a raised slab of stone and had to catch myself against the wall. Evelina flung open the door. Golden light bathed her face.
"Here," she said. "Here it all is."
I followed her into the room. It, unlike all the hallways that we'd come down, was lit with a steady golden glow. Sconce lanterns lined the walls, all lit, as if awaiting the imminent return of its occupant. The room was small but immaculate, the only place in this entire castle that seemed to be truly in one piece. A neatly made bed with blankets of violet velvet, a desk with two golden pens, a closed leather-bound book, a single pair of gold wire-framed glasses, an armoire, one door open, two lone, fine jackets hanging within. On the coffee table, a single spoon, a single saucer. One shoe, neatly placed at the corner of the room. I stood there staring at it all as Evelina flung her arms out and spun around. "Is this it?" I was grateful that she was too drunk to hear the complicated emotion in my voice.
"All that remains, yes," she said. "He didn't leave much behind all those years ago. Much of it was lost when..."
Her gleeful smile faded. A shadow fell over her.
"When it all happened."
She turned to me abruptly, her big blue eyes watery and glistening under the lantern light.
"A mistake, surely," she said. "That he would destroy so much when he left. This is why I kept all of this. Some of it took years to find in the dirt and rubble. I kept it, cleaned it, put it here, to wait for him."
She picked up the single shoe, her finger dancing along the edge of the laces. I paused at the desk, and the strange collection of random items atop it.
One of them was a little ink drawing of Lahore. At least, what I thought was Lahore. But the perspective was from an angle I didn't recognize, looking down at the city from the east.
Is there anyone else here who knew him back then? I asked.
Here? Living here? In this house? Evelina seemed confused by the question.
Yes, or, well, anyone. Any of... I settled on, thinking this would go over well. Any more of our family?
The records didn't speak of anyone else. But hell, Lahore was very, very isolated. Who knows? She stared blankly at me, then burst into high, manic laughter.
Of course not! There's no one else here! He killed them all!
I didn't know why I wasn't expecting this answer. I stilled, not sure how to respond. She paused, turned, peered over her shoulder at me.
Everything here changed that day, she said. The day he left.
Evelina was much younger than Vincent had been. And yet, I hadn't done the exact math, had assumed she was born after Vincent's ascension. But that was a hasty assumption. It hit me just how hasty it had been when I looked into her eyes now. You were there. I meant it as a question. It came out as a statement. She nodded, a slow smile spreading over her face.
I was,
she whispered, conspiratorially, like we were telling ghost stories.
He did it before he left for the Qajari. Set up all the pieces. Even then, everyone knew he would win, especially him. So, he had to set up everything beforehand. Get rid of everyone who stood in his way.
She touched the wall, like stroking the arm of an old friend.
Lahore was beautiful a long time ago. Kings lived here. It is a safe place. These walls sheltered kings during the reigns of our enemies. Perhaps they will do so again one day.
Her gaze slipped back to me, amused.
All the little kings were here. The one king slaughtered all the rest.
Little kings. Vincent had always spoke so dismissively about his own rise to power and all the things he had done to facilitate it. But none of it was simple. None of it was small.
I hid here, Evelina said.
Here?
Here.
She pointed to the bed.
Underneath it. I was so small, but I remember.
She tapped her temple.
He did the older ones first, then the children. His father, my father, their sisters. He probably thought he needed to do those when his strength was up because it would be difficult. I think my father gave him a good fight.
She spoke all of this dreamily, calmly, as if speculating on history rather than the deaths of her family.
Then he came here. He got Georgia, Marlena, Ameth.
Children? I asked quietly.
Oh, yes, so many of us. And then there were none.
Why did he let you live? I asked. Because your birth position couldn't threaten him? Evelina laughed, like I'd just said something very charming and foolish.
Birth position didn't matter. My uncle was a very thorough man.
Then, before I knew what was happening, she reached for the straps of her dress and slid them off her shoulders. The light fabric pooled around her waist, leaving her torso and breasts bare, and revealing a star-shaped scar right between them.
He didn't let me live, she said. He dragged me out from under there and put his sword through my chest. I lay right here, beside my brother and sister's bodies. I thought my playmates and I would go to the next world together.
She smiled serenely.
But the mother was with me that night. The mother chose me to live.
Goddess, I asked, how old were you?
5 summers, perhaps.
My throat thickened. I knew what Vincent was capable of. It shouldn't have shocked me, disgusted me, to think of him slaughtering children when he slaughtered the rest of his family. And yet, the knowledge that this was the truth hiding behind his nonchalant non-answers, behind his matter-of-fact acceptance. I have never hidden from you, Vincent whispered in my ear. The fact that power is a bloody, bloody business, my little serpent. No, but it had taken me far too long to look closely at what that meant. I'm sorry that happened to you, I said quietly. Evelina's strange solemnity broke, melting back to her wine-dipped euphoria. A grin spread across her blood-stained mouth.
I'm not. It all went as the mother wanted it to, and it wasn't so very horrible, considering all that we gained.
It was horrible, though. It was so horrible I had to bite my tongue hard to keep from saying so.
I know he knew that, too, she said. That I survived for a reason, to look after Lahore. Someone needed to. But he was so very busy. I never received any answers to my letters.
Her gaze fell back to me, piqued with interest I'd spent my entire life learning how to recognize.
Strange, how no one knew that his blood ran in yours.
She took a step closer, and I took a step backward.
How strange of him, she murmured. To let a daughter live? The closest link to his line when so many had been sentenced to death for much lesser crimes.
Her eyelashes fluttered. Another step. She was now so close I could feel her body heat from her bare skin. Vampire delicate.
Half human, yes?
She whispered.
I can smell it.
Her fingers reached for my cheek, my jaw, my throat. My hand fell to my blade. Step back, Evelina. Her nose brushed mine, eyes lifting as her full lips curled.
We're family.
If I had to take her down now, I'd have to stab her right in the center of her chest, right over the scar that my father had left on her when she was only a child. What sickening poetic justice. I didn't want to kill Evelina. At least, not yet. We hadn't even come close to getting what we came here for, and who knew what chaos killing the lady of the house would unleash? I said firmly, step back. She didn't move.
There you are.
I never thought I would ever again be grateful to hear that voice, and yet here I was. Rain leaned against the doorframe, taking in the scene with an expression that told me I was absolutely going to hear more about this when we were alone. Evelina turned to Rain, approaching him. She didn't bother to cover herself. Actually, by the way she was looking at him, with that still insatiable hunger, it seemed very intentional not to do so. I found this more irritating than I had any right to. His gaze flicked over her impassively before returning to me. Dawn's coming, he said.
Forgive me if I need to steal my wife away, Lady Evelina.
Evelina ignored him, her hand going to his chest. I watched the press of her fingers against him and had a hard time looking away.
Tell me, usurper, she murmured. How did my uncle's dying breath feel? I have so wondered.
Her fingertips rose, dancing over the bridge of his nose, the hollow of his cheekbone.
Was it cold against your face or warm?
But gently, politely, Rain took Evelina's wrists and moved them away, instead slipping a wine glass into her grasp.
I didn't take any pleasure in that death, he said.
And his gaze flicked over his shoulder at the end of that sentence, spoken so solemnly, with far more truth than I expected. He held his hand out to me.
Come to bed.
Evelina stepped aside,
still staring at Rain with a blank, indecipherable look on her face. I placed my hand in Rain's, and then I jumped as Evelina burst out in uproarious laughter. She laughed and laughed and laughed. She laughed as she threw her head back and drained her glass of wine, and she didn't stop as she turned away and staggered back down the hall, not even bothering to put her dress back on. As her voice faded down the hall, Rain shot me a silent, wide-eyed, "Are you hearing this?" look. He leaned close and murmured, "I almost wished I didn't interrupt, just to see where that was going to go. Wasn't sure if she was going to seduce you or eat you." Honestly, I wasn't either. "I had it under control," I said. He squeezed my hand, and it was only then that I realized I was shaking. He pressed his other hand over mine, as if to still the tremors before letting go.
"I can't wait to get out of here," he muttered.
Chapter 22. Araya. Lahore was, so far, not very helpful. Evelina had given us all suites near each other. They were once grand apartments that were now dusty and rat-infested, with cracked windows that let in flecks of the overnight rain over the tile floor. When Misha pulled back the covers of her bed and several roaches ran out, she simply stared down at it with a look of utter disgust on her face, threw the covers back into place, and said brightly, "This can be Septimus's room." This, Keturah had found exceedingly amusing. I think it was the only time I'd seen the woman laugh. Not that we were doing much sleeping anyway. The keep had gone eerily quiet, even to the vampires and their far superior hearing. That was when we acted, when we went through the libraries, the studies, the empty bedchambers. Septimus's companions were excellent at slipping through hallways unnoticed, bringing back anything that looked even remotely as if it could be useful. Soon our chambers were full of a comically mismatched assortment of objects: books, jewelry, weapons, artwork, sculptures. All of them were seriously damaged, reeking of mold or rust. All were presented to me with a silent raised eyebrow of, "Well?" After a dozen instances of this, I held the half-rotten atlas between two fingers. A few bugs scurried from between the pages, irritated at having their home disturbed for the first time in what appeared to be centuries. Clearly, this was it. The answer to all our problems, the key to historically unknown power. I gave Septimus a deadpan stare that must have said everything my words didn't.
"We came all this way," he said, letting out a puff of cigarillo smoke through his nostrils. "Have a little patience, Dove."
"Evelina said that Vincent never returned here."
"Evelina doesn't seem like the most reliable person. Not to insult a host."
"No," Rain said, "but she doesn't seem like she would just forget that the uncle she's obsessed with showed up."
"Unless she's keeping it from us intentionally. He kept plenty of memorabilia from this place. Why else would he do that?"
"Nostalgia?" Misha offered, but even she didn't sound convinced. Vincent had no love for this place. I'd suspected that before, and now there was little doubt of that in my mind. He wasn't the type to wax nostalgic about the past, especially not parts of it that he felt little affection for. Lahore certainly fell into that category. If he'd kept any connection to this place, it would have been for a reason. I sighed. "What am I supposed to do?" I muttered. "Just touch everything in this castle and see what? Exactly.
Septimus shrugged.
"You'll know."
"What if I don't?"
"Then we wasted a trip, and we'll try something else."
More time to search. More time for the Bloodborne to sink their claws into this kingdom. More time for Rain to establish his hold on it, too. I heaved another exasperated sigh and kept wading through objects. Hours and hours and hours of useless shit. Eventually, we gave up. So much of the keep was so badly damaged.
Even the artifacts that seemed like they had once been quite valuable were now little more than junk. I doubted that I would just magically know when I would come across a possession of Vincent's. But even still, it was obvious to me that these were worth nothing to him. Eventually, when we'd made it through all the unoccupied, safe rooms of the keep, we allowed ourselves to rest. My suite had only one bedroom. Rain, to my relief, took the couch without complaint, leaving Misha to sleep beside me. She was snoring within minutes of crawling into bed, limbs sprawled out in all directions. I curled up into a little ball and stared at the window at the glimpse of night-drenched Lahore through the opening in the curtains. Dawn was still at least an hour away. Sleep called to me, but I didn't want to know what I'd see in its depths. Eventually, I couldn't just lie there anymore. I slipped out of bed and grabbed my blades, going out to the sitting room to see. "Where are you going?" Rain stopped mid-movement. He was half-shrouded by gauzy curtains, leaning out the open window. He looked me up and down, an eyebrow raised. "Did you sleep in your armor?" I glanced down at myself, briefly self-conscious. "Where are you going?" I asked again instead of answering.
"Probably the same place you were. Feeling restless, too."
I didn't want to admit it aloud. I glanced back at the open bedchamber door and Misha sleeping beyond it. Reading my face, Rain said,
"Oh, don't worry about her. Nothing wakes her."
Then he outstretched his hand.
"Come on. Let's go get into some trouble."
I didn't move. Fine, he was right. I was going to sneak out into the city. Admitting that to him was a whole different concession. He sighed.
"I know you, Orea. Don't tell me you aren't curious."
I peered over his shoulder, out the open window to the eerie, desolate skyline beyond. He smiled.
"I thought so. Come on, let's go."
This was a stupid idea. I took his hand anyway. Lahore had seemed abandoned when we first arrived here, and the strangeness of the keep, seemingly occupied only by Evelina and her stable of turned children, had only made that sensation stronger. But the city, while dilapidated, was not deserted. People did indeed actually live here, congregating in the few habitable buildings throughout the city. Or maybe living was too generous a term. Rain and I wandered through uneven, cracked roads and paths through dilapidated piles of brick. Those within peered at us with hungry, wary eyes, whispers falling to silence as we passed. "Do you think they recognize us?" I whispered to Rain.
"No," he said. "No way these people know what a couple of royals from hundreds of miles away look like. They don't recognize us, but they definitely recognize outsiders."
That wasn't hard. The people who lived here were twisted shadows of vampires or humans, all equally hungry. The eyes that stared at us were shadowed, more akin to those of starving animals than sentient beings. Unlike most cities in Obitrace, the city wasn't divided into vampire and human territory. Instead, everyone seemed to scurry for whatever workable shelter they could find. Life anywhere in the House of Night was always dangerous and bloody. But here, the feral desperation festered like an infected wound. Rain and I passed several vampires crouched over another, lying open and bleeding in the middle of the street. A vampire body. Blood that wouldn't even be able to keep them alive on its own, providing only the temporary pleasure of relief. But hunger that intense didn't care. It was hard not to shiver at the way their heads snapped up when we passed, the way their eyes followed me. Rain stepped a little closer to me after that, his hand on my back. We made the silent mutual decision to drift away from the populated areas, instead wandering out toward the dunes. Eventually, we came to the edge of a lake. It was an eerie, beautiful scene. The body formed by a crater in the ruins, remains of past destruction now cradling glassy water. Broken remnants of marble slabs jutted from the water's surface, ghostly under the moonlight.
Beyond it, several of Lahore's tallest towers, spires of shattered stone, loomed over us. Goosebumps rose on my arms.
"Must have been something,"
Rain murmured.
"Long time ago."
"Yes, it was as beautiful as it was sad." Rain's head turned.
"Look."
He nudged my arm and lifted his chin to our left. At the edge of the lake, a woman knelt down filling a bucket. A human. I recognized that immediately. Her stupidity was mind-boggling to me. Why a human would be out after nightfall, even so close to dawn, in this place, was beyond me. But then again, living in constant danger made one numb to it. I knew that too well. She didn't see the Hiaj vampire flying overhead, landing on one of the nearby ruins, and slowly climbing.